Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Maybe Next Year, the only podcast that is condemned on many, many sides. My name is Frank.
I'm Paul.
I'm Scott.
And that's all we're going to say about that. But holy moly, big, exciting news in Bills land. I can't believe this happened. The Bills lost a preseason game to the Minnesota Vikings.
Obviously,
the most important news of the week, guys. Just, you know, feeling down about the season after a loss. Does Nathan Peterman look like, you know, is he MV Peterman, as we were saying on the radio this week, or, you know, or is he, you know, something else? But we're going to get into all of that. And then after about an hour of discussing the Minnesota
game, yeah,
Vikings Bills preseason game, we'll probably go to Scott's crazy schedule on this day in Bills history, because I don't think there was really anything else that happened this week.
I thought I heard something about a trade. Did you guys hear something about a trade?
Well, it's the NFL, so I mean, yeah. Maybe it was a baseball trade you heard.
Yeah,
about
maybe this? That's what it was. It's probably basketball, yeah, because you don't have like big value for value trades in the NFL. They're pretty rare to actually trade someone in season, or, you know, this close to the season to any other team.
I mean, that's, you know, like crazy. Kiko Alonso is the only one I can think of, and everyone, like, that never happened. So the fact that it would happen with the same team, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's funny. It's if people go into a season like, oh, like, what are you going to do? Trade a starting wide receiver and your top cornerback and possibly two of your top athletes on the team. Who does that? I mean, it's just, you'll never see that in modern-day NFL.
Well, we'll put it this way. One of our listeners asked if it's time to invoke the name of the podcast already for this season.
I think we technically have to wait until at least the season starts. I think that's, but we're, yeah, that was.
I would appreciate and understand that feeling.
I would say that the title for this podcast, maybe it's certainly not this year. Maybe that's what we'll stick to for now.
Well, the Bills got, you know, look, they lost a game to the Vikings. It'll be a miracle if we even talk about it, to be honest. I mean, I'm sure we will, but, like, we could really get lost in trade watch. The Buffalo Bills traded, you know, Ronald Darby to the Eagles for a guy named Jordan Matthews and a pick.
And that's the minor trade,
right?
That's the tiny one.
That's the supplemental trade. That's the side quest to the main quest of this video game, which is, you know, successfully trade Sammy Watkins to the Rams. That's Sammy Watkins for a cornerback whose name I can't. It's EJ something, right? We didn't have enough EJs on the team.
Games, I believe.
Filling in the new EJ quotient, because, of course, we had a space on the roster after letting EJ Manuel go.
Brief gap. We locked that up.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I still think there are a couple of Williamses down. I'm surprised they didn't get any of those in the trade.
Yeah, I think they have the league minimum of Williamses, which is like the bare minimum acceptable. But we were very low on the dot J players, and in particular the EJs. So EJ Gaines comes back from the Rams with a draft pick. So the Bills end up with a starting wide receiver, a starting and or, you know,
a borderline
second string borderline cornerback, and two draft picks. They, of course, give up the dynamic talent of Sammy Watkins and really the good talent of Ronald Darby. It's funny because upon reflection, I don't know how much I'm going to miss Ronald Darby, even though he was a pretty good corner. Probably certainly a better corner than like EJ Gaines. But, you know, you figured you had two really good players there. They were both maybe going to leave at the end of the year. And the Bills go right into Sabres mode, to be honest, right into hockey mode of dumping expensive players on, you know, with less than a year on their contract. Let's go to Paul on the ground in New York State. How are you handling this? What was the scene there in Buffalo before you left? And just give us your thoughts overall on these trades. We will get to these specific questions of what this does to the team in a minute, but give us your thoughts on the trades.
Sure. I mean, I think these are bold moves by general manager Tim Murray, clearly with not for the future. I'm sorry, Brandon Bean. My bad.
The Beaner.
Yeah.
And so, Shane McGavin. Let's not forget about him.
Yeah.
This is what I think people often wonder, like the second a trade is made, they're thinking, okay, did the team win this trade? Did they lose this trade? The honest question is, we won't know anytime soon. We won't know at the end of this year. We probably won't know at the end of next year. And it might be some years down the road before you find out, because you're going to wait to see how the careers play out of all the current players involved, as well as what they do with these draft picks and how the careers of those players pan out. Because as a result, you know, you could have Sammy could have a breakout year this year and look like a star, and the Rams could re-sign him to a huge salary and he could do incredible, or he could have a mediocre year, or the worst situation for the Rams, he has a great year and they sign him to a huge contract and then he's injured for the rest of his career. On the Bills end, most of what you read about Jordan Matthews, at least on Philadelphia sites, is that he is an average receiver whose stats were somewhat inflated by the fact that he was all that Philadelphia really had at the time when he was putting up those big numbers. But let's, you know, my thoughts on it, I don't know what to make of the trade yet, other than it, I'll give the positive the name. The positive is I fully understand the logic here. Like, this bodes extremely well for next season when you have two picks in the first round, two in the second, and two in the third. That is exactly what Bean McDermott said they were going to do, is get the draft picks they need to build a team for the future. And now they have those picks, and the positivity of that is tough to deny. On the negative side, and then I'll shut up and let Scott talk so I don't take all the valid points, not saying that I have. The negative side is, how do you sell this to the Kyle Williamses and the LeSean McCoys and everyone else who is ready to be competitive this year, when you're just saying, okay, I know two positions of weakness were defensive backfield and wide receiver. And then you have the bolstering of signing someone like Anquan Boldin, which, by the way, we didn't even talk about last week, and was supposed to be.
Right.
That was supposed to be our primary topic of discussion on this podcast before all that happened.
I better add him to the list so we don't forget.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So they trade for Boldin, and then the veterans.
Boldin.
Yeah, sign Boldin, excuse me. And you're thinking, okay, good. They are planning to be somewhat competitive this year. And then you take your most dynamic offensive player, not named LeSean McCoy, and someone who is, what, 8 years younger, 6, 8 years younger than LeSean McCoy, and you unload him. And then you take someone who won, I think that it was the Pro Football Writers Association Defensive Rookie of the Year 2 years ago. He lost the overall award. I know that wasn't the Pro Football Writers one, but still, great defensive player, sophomore slump, but seemingly someone who, you know, you could build around, another young player, and you unload him as well. And those are undeniable negatives. If I'm in the locker room, I'm thinking, what the hell? We've downgraded our talent here, and we're, you know, this really is a kind of a sign that 2017 is not the priority for this team.
Scott.
I have a million points, and I'm going to take them all.
Go for it.
I will not leave Frank any air worth.
I'll come up with something.
Yeah, since mine are done, I don't really care. Take all the rest you want. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to break this briefly down into tactics and strategy. So tactics, I think Paul raises a good point about the trades. I would say the funny thing is, of course, that the Bills probably almost won both of those trades. I would say it's pretty close to a win on both. Like, really, like, Darby's pretty good. He definitely had, you know, two or three more years under contract, so that one's a little tougher for me, especially for but at the same time, you're getting a starting wide receiver, at least. I mean, you know, I'm going to call him Robert Woods for all intents and purposes. Basically, we get Robert Woods back on some level, and you get a pick with it. So I think that's a pretty decent deal, even if Darby may be a better version, maybe a better equivalent player than Robert Woods. I still think that's a win for the Bills a little bit. I also think that the Watkins trade, frankly, is a bit of a win too, frankly. I mean, I was really excited this year to try and see Sammy and Tyrod and LeSean all on the field together, but I had no confidence that was going to happen just because it's Sammy and because he's so injured. So getting this value from him after we had already decided in March or April, whatever it was, we weren't going to pick up the fifth year and he was probably going to walk after the season. I think it's a win for us, given that we kind of knew that he was going to be gone at the end of the season. This is, I was reading on The Ringer and they called it an NBA trade, where this happens all the time.
Right.
People go into the off season, you know, you're going to lose a guy, you might as well get some value back that you can then produce and turn into another asset for the team. So on the tactical level, I think that was well done. I think I'm going to say the biggest thing that surprised me about this thing, it did not leak beforehand. Did anyone hear anything about Sammy Watkins or Ronald Darby being traded in the last three or 4 months?
One of our secretaries came back from lunch. One of the people I imagine told me, hey, Bills traded Watkins. I'm like, shut up. It wasn't even a discussion point. Darby also not a discussion point. Totally out of the blue to me. Not even speculated.
I think that speaks to, in some ways, the professionalism that Bean and McDermott are now running their operation, that they don't have these kind of sieve of leaks that come out that, frankly, are ultimately, I mean, ultimately, I don't want to get into how much it damages the team, but it certainly doesn't make the organization look good. So that was pretty shocking. And then finally, I mean, this is kind of a minor point, but they actually had a decent press conference at the end. I don't know if you guys watched it on Friday, but it actually looked like they had cogent responses to some obvious questions that were forthcoming. You know, ultimately, yeah, they have to kind of sell the trade a little bit because they're giving up good players and getting picks in return, and people were expecting to win the season. But I think anytime you're in this position, you're going to have to do that. So I think that was a little surprising. On the strategy level, though, I think I have a lot more questions in terms of what is that strategy? Because again, Doug Whaley was good at making tactical moves. He didn't have a strategy, and that's why we ended up with the team that we did, and he got canned. This is the same question. If we were going to do, my ongoing assumption kind of into the season was basically we're doing a Rexectomy. We're going to remove Rex. We're going to attempt to keep the team that was built somewhat successfully by Whaley and Ryan to a lesser extent intact, and substitute a couple key pieces here and there. And then assuming that we had a base talent to win with, if we got rid of Ryan and his insane game management and poor defensive calls and inability to teach his scheme anymore, that we'd be able to turn this into something. We'd be able to take the decent offense that we created over the last 2 years, combine it with the Jim Schwartz defense of 2 years ago, and we'd have a playoff team. If that was the theory, then doing this the way that they did obviously now makes no sense, because even if you count bringing in Bolden as, you know, we're not giving up the ship or whatever Brandon Bean called it, that the Sammy was the, we didn't design our, we now basically have three Robert Woods possession type receivers, guys who can win in short areas, guys who can get open in small windows, who are good at running routes, which is all great if we have Tom Brady at quarterback. We pretty much have the opposite of Tom Brady at quarterback. We have a guy who's designed to run around in the backfield and hold on to the ball long enough to get Sammy downfield or get someone downfield long enough and throw him a deep bomb with a really good deep bomb throwing quarterback. Now we have guys, none of whom can really get down the field. And he's saying, oh, well, we got Rod Streeter. We got, you know, guys who aren't even probably, you know, Rod Streeter, I get it. He may make the team. So may Walt Powell. But regardless, those guys are only going to be on the field in four wide receiver sets. They're not going to be, you know, it just, the strategy is a little concerning to me. If the strategy is built towards winning the season, that leads me to believe that this whole thing is really just cynical and kind of like they're making the sop enough to the team to keep them competitive for this year, when in fact they are doing, as Paul said, which is built for 2018. So I have more, but I will stop there. So
no, that was good, because my question is whether, my first question was going to be really whether this amounts to tanking and or not. And to respond, I mean, I think Scott is right that they've traded different types of receivers. I mean, like you said, they've got three Robert Wood types. That might speak to the type of offense they think they were going to run anyway. And so if you weren't going to really use Sammy Watkins the way that he should be used, then what was the point? That was another reason. Further, what was the point in having him? You know, like if I was thinking about chess earlier today, and like, you know, the queen is the most powerful piece, but sometimes the knight is a piece that can do, that can do something that the queen can't. If they looked at a guy like Jordan Matthews and said, okay, this really is the type of thing where we want to stack guys right now who are these possession type receivers, and we want to, you know, going towards next year, find out which ones are the best ones. And really what we want is 16 games from all of our wide receivers, and we feel like between that and LeSean McCoy and Tyrod's ability to run, we're going to be able to have a productive offense. I've looked at these trades, and I understand the initial instinct of, like, generally when you're dumping contracts, NBA and NHL trades, it's because you're not expecting to make the playoffs, and you're trying to tank and or at least maybe not tank, but just like shuffle off assets that you don't need to get ones that you can use. I think there's a little of that, but I also think that if you're Brandon Bean or Sean McDermott. I had to pause and think that it wasn't Scott.
You got it that time, though.
Yeah, I did. I did. Really, if there's an honest assessment of this team, maybe you feel like you just went from about an 8.3 win team to an 8 win team or a 7.9 win team. Like, the difference between the players at those two positions, like, how many more wins was Sammy Watkins really going to bring you over a Jordan Matthews? It's partially an impossible question, and certainly the feeling would be with Sammy's talent that or Watkins' talent that it would be it's a downgrade for sure, I guess, in some ways.
LeSean McCoy said that right off the bat, and he used to be teammates with Jordan Matthews, and that comment got some attention. That LeSean said, obviously, you know, the what we're getting isn't as good as what we had.
Right, but I would say to LeSean, there's a chance that he's going to be there the whole season in a way that he hasn't been. You know, and the fact that even I think they're about the same in yards and touchdowns, despite the fact that Sammy's played about 10 or 12 less games. But I don't know, maybe. Yeah. Maybe you don't have to compromise on your offense as much if you're confident that all the players can be there. And so maybe you legitimately can look, you know, the fan base in the eye and with a straight face and be sincere and say, I don't think that we're really at a, you know, a disadvantage. You've brought the talent level down, but you haven't really, you know, blown it up. And so you're in the same position that you were before. You're probably good enough to win 7 or 8 games, and you're going to need 2 or 3 games to break your way. And that's the same for me if there's Sammy Watkins in there or if there is Jordan Matthews, and maybe even doubly so for Ronald Darby versus EJ Gaines, despite how good Darby is. Like, I look at that as one piece out of a lot, you know, even just out of, you know, 25 starters almost. It doesn't seem like a huge drop off to me. Paul, do you disagree with that assessment?
I don't, but you noted too early on there that that's nearly an impossible question to answer. So we're not sure. Let's put it this way. We, you know, we haven't talked about the potential for playoffs for this team yet because we weren't really close enough to the regular season. We'll creep in, talk more about those things as we go on. But I think this kind of says, like, hey, yeah, maybe the Bills were only an 8.3 win team based on prior years. But if Darby returns to that rookie year form, and if Watkins has a healthy 16 games, which, let's be honest, is a possibility but not a probability, then maybe this is that team that can win 10 games because he adds that dynamic to the offense. What you've said now is we're hedging our bets that he is not, that he's not going to be a superstar receiver in this league due to his probably due to his health issues, because I haven't heard anyone at One Bills Drive talk about his talent. And so they're going to kind of say, yeah, we're going to, and this goes to what you were saying, Frank, they will now get what they hope to be a healthy 15, 16 games out of Jordan Matthews. And say, hey.
And he's injured in his first practice.
Yeah, that's the irony that we're going to go to here. And then that Sammy's only going to end up playing 10 or 12 still, and then that's going to make that look like a very good move. And like, look, we wouldn't have made the playoffs anyway because Sammy was only healthy 10, 12 games.
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, I think getting to the tank question is – I think tanking it obviously has this kind of moniker, and you could see Brandon Bean trying to split the difference, kind of you know, cut the baby in half and say, we're trying to win now, we're trying to win tomorrow. And it's like, it's like the, it's kind of, if you simplify things enough, anything can sound good, or that these things aren't in mutually, you know, disconclusive. And he's like, he's saying no one's untouchable. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure if you had Tom Brady, he'd be untouchable.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure if someone offered you every first round pick for the next 3 years and every draft pick they had for the next 3 years, you wouldn't trade Tom Brady, because Tom Brady makes you a winner and a Super Bowl contender this year and the next 3 years regardless. Mm-hmm. So I think it's frustrating. I think I had a much similar thought to you, Frank. Like, if you were going to rate the Bills as on offense, if they were an offense that could carry them to the Super Bowl and that was like a 10, and they were an offense that could do nothing and it was a 1, what changed this week? Did they go from a 7 to a 6?
Probably.
And going to your point too, Scott, it's not like either way they were a Super Bowl contender with or without Sammy. So,
see,
you know,
see, this is the thing. And this is the thing. This is the kind of the thing that I kind of came up when I was thinking about this the other day was what part of me wishes maybe we had just done one of these.
Yeah.
If you just do one of them, then you can kind of sell it to your team as we're going to be an offense that can score 30 points a game. And we're, our offense is going to take us to the Super Bowl. We're going to have Sammy. We're going to have Anquan. We're going to have Zay. We're going to have Tyrod, LaShawn. We're going to have good O-line. That's how we're going to get there. And then the defense is just going to have to hang around in the games and try and keep us in there. Or vice versa, you trade Watkins, you get Gaines, and say, we fixed our secondary problems. Now we don't have as many concerns there. We're going to be the team that keeps everybody under 10, and all the offense has to do is script together for a field goal or a touchdown and whatever. I feel like if you could do just one, it makes it a little more easy, I think, to digest and sell A to the fans and B to the team to make you competitive this year and also still get you a pick there. So I think that's maybe the one kind of hypothetical that I would have explored maybe a little more, Brandon. I mean, obviously, there's a certain symmetry to doing it and getting the kind of two guys to replace the two guys. But I think clearly the way that they're talking about Gaines and the way they're talking about Kevin Seymour to a certain extent and the way that McDermott values his cornerbacks, this is the guy that traded Josh Norman away or let Josh Norman go to the Redskins because under his system, this kind of zone three concept, the corners aren't asked to do as much. They're really just kind of given a zone and that's not it. They're not have to bump and run. There's not a lot of man concepts like Rex Ryan would put you on an island. So it seems like that might have been the way to go to maybe let Darby go, you know, bring in, you know, keep Watkins, get your pick from Darby, which is, again, not going to be as high of a pick as you got for Sammy. But that, I think, maybe I maybe would have liked that a little bit more.
Yeah,
but
and part of that goes, too, to, and this is one reason I don't think tanking applies, is you've given up a 24-year-old with a bright future in Sammy Watkins and a 23-year-old with potentially bright future as well in Ronald Darby. Why get rid of two young, talented players when you maybe could have just gotten rid of one and gotten that, you know, well, I won't go to the same exact point Scott mentioned, but you know, that's my thought too.
Some of, I guess, I mean, I think you do the Darby trade because, you know, you want to come back with some sort of wide receiver because you're maybe not ready to throw in the towel. That's the only thing, right? But I mean, that's
right. Oh, they would be. My thinking though is it's a wide receiver is under contract for only one more year. Darby had a couple more years under contract, and you're going to be pretty crappy wide receiver this year anyway on a running team. Why not just be that much crappier? And not have to give up Ronald Darby, a guy who could be a cornerback of your future and your team again. But Scott mentioned Seymour. He's gotten rave reviews. This could very well be a sign of the Bills feeling they had positive depth in that area, that they weren't just getting rid of players, good players, but good young players. So they obviously felt that these younger players were expendable because the last thing a truly tanking team wants to do is get rid of young talent. And the Bills just did that. They unloaded two guys.
Yeah, one of them was, but I mean, like, it doesn't count if they think that if they know or really thought Sammy Watkins wasn't going to stay. That's different. But certainly with Darby, he was young talent. I want to look at this trade through one more lens, and then we can move on. And it's through the lens of Tyrod Taylor, because I think that the really strange thing is, like, they didn't commit to building assets before they, like, if you think about before Brandon Bean got here, Tyrod Taylor went from, you know, at the bus stop waiting to get on the bus to go to the next town to they brought him back inside, gave him a sandwich and soup and a new, you know, and basically redid his contract all on the word of Sean McDermott. That's clear now that, like, you know, Whaley was doing the last little bidding of the Pegulas and McDermott before he left. He finished the draft and he finished that trade. And you only really do that if you feel like Tyrod Taylor is a guy you can win with. And that brings guys like Kyle Williams back in, and it brings guys like LeSean McCoy back in. And then Brandon Bean gets here and he gets rid of those two players. Almost the way as I'm just thinking about this now, how Buddy Nix ended up getting rid of Trent Edwards and Marshawn Lynch, like in either the preseason or the very early season when he first got
there. I think it was after week two with Edwards after they got destroyed by the Packers. Then after week four-ish or so, no, because they were both happened when I was in Costa Rica. I remember that. So
yeah,
I think it was right around September, early October of 2010.
Thanks for that, buddy. Right, because anyway, I mean, at least with Lynch. But I'm wondering if this is a signal that there is disagreement on how good Taylor is, because another thing you don't do is, you know, start sending out – if you're going to send out young talent – if you're going to send out talent and get draft picks back, you don't do it when you have – you still have a stud running back and a couple of other good players. You certainly don't do it when you've just brought your quarterback back in to a, you know, albeit another, like, kind of prove it your deal, but
they still brought him back.
They went all the way to get him back. And if you don't do that, then none, all of this is okay. Right. Like, then it's just like, okay,
why bother with Tyrod as an expensive bridge quarterback if you're going to be full on rebuild.
Right. Other than to appease players like McCoy and
Kyle,
Kyle. But if you're just going to rebuild, then you don't have to appease them. They're stuck with you, or they, you can trade them too, or in Kyle's case, he could retire. You know, so is there smoke there? Is there fire there? Do you think that maybe there's some disagreement about Taylor's value once again between within the front office?
It's definitely an interesting point, because this was definitely something that I thought about on Friday, and I didn't bring it up last podcast, but there was an article from I don't know if it was New York Upstate maybe, but it was a long discussion, but it was the reporter, I think it was Fairburn, talking with Tyrod about bringing Sammy down to Atlanta in the off season and them spending all these hours working together, and Tyrod kind of taking a true leadership role, bringing everyone down, but especially Sammy, and showing them this was going to be their first off season they had together, because they, you know, obviously Sammy had been injured and Tyrod wasn't on the field and Tyrod wasn't the starter, and bringing them down and having the time to finally kind of work out their chemistry, you know, Tyrod showing Sammy how to work and Sammy kind of taking lessons. And I thought, I was so excited by that piece that said that, you know, they were trying to finally figure this out. And it was kind of, and so that's what I was thinking about on Friday when this happened, is like, well, Tyrod just could be like, well, I'm really glad I spent all that freaking time bringing Sammy down to Atlanta, just to have him go catch passes from Jared freaking Goff. So I don't know if it's a sign of dissent within the front office or between McDermott and Bean. I think it seems like they've been very on the same page, which is another good sign of a good organization, frankly, is that you can't pull apart the tea leaves of who's on what side when it comes to, you know, decision making and that kind of stuff. You want to have that unified front, which is good, I think, from the team's perspective. But I think it does. I think this does pose very serious questions about why they bothered to kind of keep Tyrod. And obviously, if you're Tyrod, I mean, you're motivated because now you're playing for your next contract or you're playing for your next office. And
right,
to a certain extent, you just, your job's a little harder now, but you kind of had a hard job anyway. And you kind of knew that probably going in. So I would hope that he still goes out there and competes accordingly. And, you know, to a certain extent, this is kind of a, we go to the playoffs this year or we blow up the team kind of question. Like season, and frankly, it's still that we're still in that mode. The job just got a little harder. I don't think anyone would say this team is not capable. The problem is, of course, is like the Super, as it always is, the last 17 years, or the last ever since Brady showed up, whatever that was. If this was a team in the AFC West or the NFC North or, you know, an NFC South, let's say, I would feel like we have a much better chance of just going in and maybe we get those one or two games and we break the right way and maybe this is the way we go. But it seems just like the way it always is we needed to be right now. We need to be so much better than the Patriots to have, or so much better than an average NFL team to have a shot at the playoffs, given the Patriots' role in the division. So at this point, maybe it's best to kind of just take the picks.
Take the picks.
It's a super depressing note to go hot on.
No, it is. I agree. I mean, I guess if I want to look for some of the silver lining on this trade, one, because we, and this goes to the previous question rather than Frank's last question, but we talk about fall and tank. They've not really done it because you've kept the Kyle Williamses and LeSean McCoys and the Jerry Hugheses and so forth. And as far as the Tyrod thing goes, I mean, it could, there might in fact be some level of disagreement on whether or not he's worthwhile. This could be kind of a prove it thing, but they've taken away his weapons with the whole prove it thing. So, you know, I'm definitely interested in seeing, and I guess we're not quite done with the topic because I think most of our listener questions are on this topic. But you know, when I look at, you know, it Tyrod and what this says about him, I still think they are planning to move on from him. I still think they will probably, one reason they've compiled six picks is so it gives them some leverage, six picks in the first three rounds next year. It gives them some leverage if they want to trade up for the guy they feel is a quarterback. But I also believe that they're going to give Tyrod every chance this year, because if Tyrod goes out there and wins 9 or 10 games with this lineup, or takes the team to the playoffs and shows, you know, goes through his reads better and does everything else, again, I don't necessarily see that going to happen, but I think they'd be like, oh wow, now we can use that pick on some other, those picks on some other stuff. But I think they're still largely planning on him not to be the guy they go for. But again, Tyrod's on another prove it deal, so he's got every motivation in the world to play to his highest level.
I kind of wish they had just sort of, I don't know, like, whatever. Enough. All this, Ryan Tannehill's lost for the year, so, right? Like, they're going to finish second and feel great about, you know, like, we're going to have to fucking hear how they finish second. Sorry, pardon my language. Yeah.
Got to put the explicit logo on this one now.
Right, we finished second ahead of the other two teams, and we felt like we were right there, just a little closer. And I don't know. Hopefully the front office is not that dumb.
That's how I would hope so. Yeah, the 9-7 that we end up last year is not quite the same as the 12-4 the Patriots will be at. Yeah.
No. Especially when we still lose one game to either the Jets or Miami somehow. Yeah. All right. Sorry. Look, trades are fun and awesome. We should feel at least excited that they did something kind of cool, right? Like, if nothing else, like they certainly went out there and did a thing.
And it's a bold, and there was an article in the Buffalo News, I think it was Vic Carucci, mentioned that this, don't forget that this is one of the boldest trades you can make. The team traded up for Sammy Watkins 2 years ago, or, you know, 3 years.
Three years ago.
Traded up for him not all that long ago. Mortgaged the next year's first round pick. He has shown superstar level talent when he's been on the field.
Yeah.
And to just cut that guy loose and then do the same with a guy who was a couple of years ago, you know, Pro Football Writers Association Defensive Rookie of the Year. Those take cojones, as they say.
Yeah. I think it's a good thing is that they really don't seem to have any regard for the previous regime.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's no, they're like, we didn't trade. They, one of them, it was either McDermott or Bean, said something like, you know, Sammy didn't ask to cost two first round picks, right? Like, Sammy's just Sammy. He's out there trying to be the best football player he can be. And it's not really fair to hold him up to have to be, meet a certain standard because of what Doug Whaley did. And really that's a credit that they're like, you know, we don't have to prove anything like that. These are not our guys. This is, if we can find value, how can we fix it going forward? Sunk costs and all of that. And so I applaud the, you know, now if they draft a quarterback or something next year and then they stick with him for 3 years too long, well, then, you know.
Yeah, if Nathan Peterman 3 years from now is 17-17 with you know, 12 games lost to injury, we'll know how they feel about loyalty. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So the Bills played a game against the Vikings, and apparently there were some good things in there, apart from Sammy, who they threw to, probably to prove that he could play without being.
That was the thing. That was the fascinating thing from that press conference, was that McDermott said he didn't find out about it until after the game that they were even shopping him. That this whole thing was done by Bean behind the scenes, and he was just running the offense the way he thought best.
Well, yeah, and what's his name? I mean, Bean says, like, you know, like, well, I get calls all the time on these things, and some were getting more serious, and maybe you just don't want to run everything by your coach all the time because you don't know what's real and what isn't.
Yeah, that is a little surprising, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, you were going on, Frank.
I just was, you know, I know Scott watched the condensed version and Paul watched the last 3 minutes of it. Do you want to give us a brief rundown of the Bills Vikings, or
I mean, I'll do a brief one. I mean, I think, you know, it was definitely, obviously, I think the defense looked encouraging, which is good. I mean, again, we're not going against, you know, the Patriots or anybody important, and obviously it is the preseason, but the defense looked good. They looked energized. They looked like they knew what they were doing for the most part.
For longtime listeners, we could in fact call it the Judy Greer of defenses.
Mm. Indeed.
This defense above a place of value. Yes. No, the she's got a new
I remember these things.
She does have a new commercial.
It's a new commercial for Comfort Inn or
yeah, something. God bless Judy Greer.
Yeah. Anyway, the
Bills should do the podcast see if we can accidentally get her attention.
The defense looked fine. Paul, this is my challenge for you.
All right.
When the season gets going and Eddie Yarbrough is on the field and gets a sack. Okay.
Okay.
Everyone's tracking this story of the guy who's like,
yep,
second year man
out of the nowhere prospect, yeah,
out of nowhere. You know, he's gone from third team to basically starting the preseason game because Lawson was injured. He's basically our number three or four defensive end right now. So if he gets a sack at any point, Paul, your job on Twitter is to start the "Do you even yar bro?" Hashtag.
Okay.
Understood.
Yeah, I've got to write this down though. I'm looking for a pen.
Do you even yar, bro?
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay.
Very good.
But anyway, so we got that. And then on offense, obviously, I mean, I think, again, it's good. Again, preseason, you don't want to take anything more than a grain of salt, but with anything other than a grain of salt. But basically, yeah, I mean, the run offense looked great. And the, Tolbert looks fine. Williams looks fine. Obviously, Williams got hurt by the end of the game, but obviously those guys are very effective at this particular scheme. I'm obviously intrigued to see how LaShawn will run in it. LaShawn, I think, his style is a little less suited potentially for this kind of one cut zone kind of running scheme that the other guys seem to be running. But LaShawn's good enough to where it's less of a concern. But at the same time, I think it will still be interesting to see how that plays out on Sunday, I guess, when we play the Eagles. But we'll talk about
on Thursday. Yeah, I was going to say.
Or Thursday, whatever it is. Yeah.
It's already a revenge match with
Ron Darby. 3 days.
Ron Darby and the Eagles. Jordan Matthews will be happy to watch that game from the sideline, but he'll be wearing Bills gear.
Yeah, right. He's Mr. Durable and gets a bone chip in his chest, and like within a day, it's just.
Right, which verifies that it's not Sammy Watkins. It's the Bills.
Yeah,
it's that's why Sammy was hurt all that time, and Jordan was healthy.
You know, he's gonna get out there and be like, "I feel great." And
exactly,
smoothies that these celebrities drink.
What was I gonna say about Jordan Matthews? Oh, the injury. Oh, but he can still practice. I mean, I understand that like there's a pain tolerance issue with that, but I mean, like you can put a red jersey on him and he can still go out and run the
right routes,
because that's the problem, is that he doesn't know any of these offenses or running the plays or being where he's supposed to be on any of these things. Like he needs to get out there and freaking practice and nobody freaking touch him.
He needs to be coached up.
Yeah, like, well, I mean, not coached up in the sense that he needs to know how to be a receiver, but just know the plays and know where to be. Otherwise, it's going to be mid-season before we get into anything.
Nah, I think you better coach him up just to be safe.
Okay.
That's
all my thoughts, really, on and Yarbrough looked great. He looked really good. He was like he got like an 85 on Pro Football Focus, so, yeah.
Very good. Paul, why don't you give us some thoughts about, well, no, you don't, we've already covered some of this. Like I was going to say,
the only Facebook thing we didn't really address, well, we did kind of address it, is Steve. And like, are you excited about the 2018 season as much as he is? And honestly, I am on that. The 2018 season, God, even if they imagine they're going to leverage those picks for someone good, or they're going to pick six players. Even if they bills it and only pick two good ones out of four, that's two decent picks out of the first three rounds you're going to get. So,
yeah. But
yeah, we've covered that. And I guess the one thing which Scott didn't mention about the game, and this is the big press here in Buffalo, right, so I'll bring it up, is Peterman and how good he looked at the end as well. And he's actually now leapfrogged Mr. Yates on the depth chart. So that makes you wonder, the Bills look to save some cash and get rid of TJ Yates. And is Nathan Peterman in the discussion next season when it comes to, you know, who is this franchise?
Right.
You're talking one preseason game. but they thought enough of that to escalate him ahead of TJ. Maybe he goes back to third string next week when Yates plays a little better and they see Peterman's limitations more as they give him more reps. But that was kind of an interesting takeaway from the game for me.
MV Peterman.
Yes. By the way, on the do you ever Yarbro hashtag, should there be a hyphen between the Yar and the Bro? No hyphen, no question mark at the end.
I think you just do it.
Y. You capitalize the B. Yeah.
Capitalize
the R and then just go straight into the BR. But I think you do BRO, right?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to get rid of the UGH here. All right. Yeah. I'm writing on the Hotel Indigo's little pad here, and no doubt I'm going to leave this at the hotel. They're going to be like, why is there a random sheet of paper here that says, do you even yarn?
You're going to lose it. It's going to become solid gold.
Right.
We're going to put that on their podcast, and it's going to turn into a huge trending thing. Damn it, Paul.
Yep, my bad.
Even worse, you made me think of what I was going to ask or say. Damn it. Oh, I thought for sure after the Vikings game, it was going to be a series of, like, this podcast was going to be a series of jokes about overreacting to Nathan Peterman.
Yeah.
and now that just not even is funny. if it was ever going to be funny.
We blew up the team, suddenly it's less funny, yeah.
Yes, okay. So we've done that. I feel like we've addressed that. Scott or Paul, did you find this day in Bills history?
I am still looking. So okay. I might pawn this off to
Scott. I'm are you
on my usual site right now looking for it?
I feel bad about
loaded for
double backing you because you just did the game recap. But no, I feel like, you know, we have to just, you know, feed you the ball here because you're the MVP. So if we could get to the final four.
Because it's the preseason and I'm on the second string and it's time for me to shine.
It's time for you to shine. Right. You're Nathan Peterman in the whole second half now. But
if we broadcast next Saturday, by the way, guys, I'm like, there is no this day in Bills history. Remind me that on August 19th of 1986, Jim Kelly signed with the Bills. So don't. So if we podcast Saturday, I can't overlook that.
Two and a quarter years after he was drafted. Yes, the final four here of the crazy schedule season. If you haven't been listening, we encourage you to go back to the last few episodes. If you don't listen to anything else, just listen to this because it's
incredible. I don't know if we have anything as good as Bills versus the assembled choir of Heavenly Angels, but
that was pretty good. Yeah, the Saints, right? That was the Saints.
Exactly. So first game or game 13, as it was, is going to be home versus the Colts. This one I had a little trouble with in terms of figuring out what the NFL was going to do here. But what they came up with is a bit of a historical throwback. Yeah, everyone remembers who the Buffalo Bills are, in fact, named after, right, Paul?
Yeah, Buffalo Bill Cody.
Yeah, exactly. Wild West. Yeah, so they end up having a little bit of a Wild West show, given that they are in Indianapolis or their home playing the Indianapolis Colts. And so what happens is we get we fall through the sand, you know, we go back into time.
Time travel. We bring
Buffalo Bill Cody forward.
That's still time travel. Okay.
It's still a little bit of time travel. We explain to him that his job for the next 60 minutes of NFL time, which could be 3 hours, obviously.
Sure.
To essentially wrangle 53 young Colts that have been loosed on the field of whatever we're calling the stadium, Ralph Wilson Stadium now. So that is the, and if they do
no,
that.
No, New Era Field. New Era
sorry,
Field.
New Era Field.
Is he wrangling the football players or actual Colts?
Actual Colts.
Okay, actual so Colts. There's no players involved in this game.
No. This is strictly a Wild West show.
We
decided that this was going to be far more entertaining than any kind of football kind of thing.
That's fair. Okay. So, all right. And there's 53 Colts.
53 okay. Colts in 1 hour.
Legend is born. 23-year-old Cody. Okay, yeah, I'm trying to quickly skim the Wikipedia page, but clearly there's just too much information.
It's a lot about his Hollywood career.
Yes, life in Cody, Wyoming. I'm going to guess that Bill Cody was a bit of a charlatan. I don't know. I just get the impression.
Sure.
You know, that he maybe didn't.
I mean, as a white guy in the 1800s, you're pretty well.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's largely a guarantee.
Yeah. Right. So I just feel like
not to maybe, be recent, you know, but
maybe his maybe he wasn't as good at the lassoing as otherwise.
Bit of killing so, Buffalo.
Yeah, right. Which unfortunately, so that's exactly what he's going to do today. I think the problem is like we'll give him 3 hours, and they're all in New Era Field. I think he can get like 10 to 12 colds, right?
Okay.
I think he could do that. So I don't know what that means. If that means the final score is Colts.
Colts 40, 43, Bills 10, yeah.
Yeah, is that how we do the math on that?
41. So he.
Oh, well, no. I have to get 53. Yeah. So yeah, it would have to be the opposite. Yeah, so. Yeah, so I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, this is one where it's going to be tough to actually beat the premise in making the.
Yeah, I'm going to say the game ends in a tie because they were doing all of.
The well, right? Yes, exactly.
Instead,
okay. 26.5 to 26.5, right. He gets.
Oh, 20, he kills one.
Right? Yep, accidentally kills one. So you know that.
I'll stick with my original. I'll say the Colts outdo Buffalo Bill Cody and largely you know roam free. They're wild horses.
Yes.
Wild. Paul.
Who's gonna ride your wild horses? It's Frank wild, and I sing some songs. Oh man, this is a tough one. I think I feel like the horses of this is a clear point I need to make. Are the colts that are traveling the horses themselves? Time traveling horses, or are they modern day horses?
No, they're modern day colts.
Yeah, I feel like the modern day. Yeah,
and all the advantages of a 21st century Colts.
But I was going the other way with that. I feel like the Colts back in the 1800s had to be more hardy, and that for Buffalo Bill to wrangle them up was a more difficult challenge. So I think he's going to be like these metrosexual horses. Is that a thing? It's not. Well, it is now.
How about we just say they're like, you know, obviously caged horses that are, you know, it's all big farm and that stuff, and it's all just right. Like they're just lazy fat horses that are
I think he's gonna be able to wrangle the lazier horses of the 21st century pretty well, and since this is I'm gonna say it's close though. I'm gonna say it's gonna be 30 to 23, but I think they'll pull it off.
Okay. I think he does pull it off as well, because a home crowd let's not forget about that home field, home stadium advantage, and I also think he is a showman, as Frank pointed out, but I think that works in his favor because I feel like there's going to be a good crowd to come out and see, you know, the living legend Buffalo Bill Cody in corporeal form. I feel like once we see that, it's going to be a good. There's going to be a good turnout. I think he's going to rise to the occasion. And I think the Colts could be a little frightened. That may work against them.
Something,
we're moving on.
No name.
So
I found a list of the 30 best horse songs, by the way. Which is
the horse with no name. Who's going to ride your wild horses?
Don't try and guess all 30.
Okay, good. That's good. We're gonna fill airtime.
I'll link
your favorite horse song.
I'll link it so you can.
Bye bye, little over there.
I like to nay nay. Is that no? Never mind. All right.
Okay. Sorry,
I just went back to the chat room and read Scott's note. Okay.
All right. So. Sorry.
What wild really scenario did you come up with for the next game, Scott?
So the next game is this is home versus the Dolphins.
Okay.
This is week 15. So
are they real Dolphins this time?
No, they're not real Dolphins. Oh, okay. We've done that. We can't do that again. We have to do these completely original every year.
Is it underwater this time?
No, it's not underwater. Okay, we're not playing in the ocean. This is on the field.
Okay.
This is on the field. On a Sunday afternoon.
Okay.
The twist of this one particular is that the Bills have removed Sammy Watkins and Ronald Darby from their roster.
Okay.
Replaced them with two essentially replacement level NFL players.
Okay. Okay.
But the Dolphins don't have Ryan Tannehill.
What?
They have Jay Cutler.
Scott, where do you get these crazy scenarios?
I know. Jay Cutler is very happy with his broadcasting deal at Fox or ESPN or wherever he is. And the Bills would never do anything crazy like trade Sammy Watkins. I mean,
right.
He's part of the triplets. That was going to be the next kind of big thing.
That's right.
Let's just, again, this is the crazy, this is my bizarre brain at work. So let's just Let's just play it out. Paul, let's just play it out.
Well, this is so tough. Like, I feel when you talk about
time travel again.
I feel when you have Buffalo Bill Cody time traveling and trying to wrangle up Colts and this being an actual NFL scenario, like, that I can kind of buy. Like, I see that a little bit. There's not as many moving pieces. but this scenario it's difficult because it is so outlandish. I would have to say, wow, this is going to be a crazy boring game. I think this is going to be two mediocre teams with this crazy scenario you've come up with. And I'm going to say since it's home against the Dolphins,
good.
That the Bills are going to win this one 13-10. It's going to be one of those.
Sometimes I like to that could really be it, Paul. That's a good guess. And I just want to point out that sometimes I like to say that at the end of the day, this is just a football game. And that's how I get around Scott's crazy things. And clearly I can't do that in this case. I think what happens is that Colin Kaepernick, who is the guest referee for the game, because...
Oh, my God.
Well, because...
Colin Kaepernick's music?
Right, it is Colin Kaepernick's music, because he's like, hello, why don't I have a job?
because you have a social conscience. Right.
Didn't we actually talk about this last week, like the difference between... Tannehill and Kaepernick and maybe even was a Cutler before this all was happened, and now it actually has happened.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
Someone did. Maybe it was us.
I remember talking about at least the difference between Tannehill and Kaepernick, but anyway, no, I don't know. Like I think that, well, I don't know. Paul says 13-10, but Jay Cutler likes to throw interceptions. He really, like, he is going to be at the height of I could give a fuck, right? Like, he the job he was supposed to try at, the Bears job, he didn't try it. I can't imagine being in Miami and it's this late in the season. And, like, it'll be amazing if he's still on the team in my mind. I think there's a chance that they'll just be like, I'm done with you. I think the Bills could win this one. And I think it'll be it's also the prime time of year for that false last push, right? Like, you win this game and you're setting yourself up. You just got to beat them again and the Pats and you're into the playoffs. So I say they get the first one in. I think they do a 24-10 convincingly at home.
All right.
I
now, are you seeing that as being like three pick sixes and a field goal? Or field goals, because he throws all the interceptions deep in his own territory, but the Bills don't run them back. The offense goes nowhere, and they kick a field goal. Both would be equally likely, but that first one makes sense.
I think he's backed up at his own goal line, and he keeps throwing the picks, and then they just can't punch it in because they don't have Sammy Watkins, obviously.
Because Cordy Glenn is still injured. He still has not played a game yet this season. Right. They're still hopeful.
And at least two of them get called back because Jerry Hughes is punching people, including his own quarterback this week.
Yep. Jerry was he didn't actually punch him, but he and Tyler were having a little face-to-face.
Let him sort it out.
Finale light.
Yeah.
Well, it's good because, you know, the guys are blowing off some steam and camp is so tough, guys, and they're all competitors out there.
Tired of hitting each
other. You know, trying to get – it's good. It's good. You get – it toughs them up for the season.
Yeah,
Richie Incognito did have a great quote about how he's the peacemaker now.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
At that stage, which is
irony. Amazing. He gets it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
thankfully, the Bills. I heard the Bills were going to sign Robo Chomo. I'm glad they decided not to do that. But all right.
What is your pick for this game, Scott?
I agree. I think it's going to be a bit of a blowout. I think it's going to be an ugly blowout to the extent that there is such a thing. But I think it is going to be I think the Bills will handle this well, and I think it could be ending up at somewhere around the like probably like the 24-6 kind of range. Like the Dolphins just kind of at this point are kind of just like, well, this season was worthless. That playoff victory, that playoff appearance last year was clearly a mirage. So I think that'll be nice. And then for the next game, so it's actually, I don't know if you guys know this, but week 16 at the Patriots, it's going to be on December 24th.
Yeah.
Christmas Eve. And so given that is the time of the year that Santa corporealizes and comes into human form, he comes up and decides that instead of Bill Belichick playing the Black Paul or the... Pedro Negro or whatever you would call it, the guy who brings coal for the stockings.
For the Krampus, or I don't know. Krampus.
Yeah, exactly. It ends up being that Santa decides to pull Belichick out of the booth or out of the sideline, and he comes down to coach the Patriots. So the Bills at the Patriots with Santa coaching the Patriots instead of Bill Belichick. And he's out the whole week, so there's no game planning.
Yeah, it's
not
yeah.
just really? Like, Santa's not going to coach us? This is just...
Well, I thought about that, but I feel very... like, to me, that seems like that's a huge disadvantage, because Belichick versus Santa, like, that's an easy one.
Yeah, I'm going to have to... Wait, do I pick first this time? I can't even...
Yeah, remember. You go... No, I go first. I go first. No, I don't know. I mean, Santa's actual magic. And I think that, you know, I think that... If Belichick is removed completely, it doesn't really change. Santa just, you know, everybody gets. I think the good news is the Bills get cookies, and they each get a they go out to the field and they break the huddle and they turn around, and at the line of scrimmage, everybody has a present, and everybody gets a nice little present that they want. And so, you know, there's a contract, and there is a new car for somebody. And it's all very sweet and cookies, and the Bills don't have to wear their jerseys. They get up and they go right to the game in their pajamas and they spend all day, and then they watch a little TV and they get kind of tired because they've eaten a lot of sugar, but they're kind of, and they're a little bored of their stuff now.
And then come back out.
Right. And the parents kick them out, and then they, you know, get tired and they go to sleep. And then the Patriots win 57-6. But I mean, they got some presents, which was nice, but they lose.
It's better than an average Patriots loss. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, no, this will you'll be on the edge of your seat with my pick. I'm sure. I think Bills are going to get some good contributions from old Saint Nick O'Leary, the tight end position, because of course Clay will be down at this point in the year.
Ooh.
I think Tom Brady without Belichick, we're going to find out that he is in fact horrible. And I scrambled and wrote down three puns is essentially all I did here. But since I said Tom Brady's going to be horrible, I'm going to have to pick the Bills in this one, because the magic is we find that Bill Belichick is actually more magical than Santa. And there I say the Bills will win this game.
Magic in that hoodie that they found.
And the magic hoodie will not be there, and the Bills will win 21-17.
Yeah, that's the thing. I feel like Santa, A, not going to have the game planning expertise that Bill Belichick does. B, certainly not going to have the game management kind of decision-making style that Belichick does. I feel like he's definitely going to be kind of distracted, frankly. I mean, he's got a lot going on December 24th, to be fair.
That is a good point.
It's debatable why he took this job. Plus, I feel like Santa would recognize
maybe that. Maybe it's the night before the election. You just, what are you going to do? Right,
exactly. At that point, it's kind of in the bag.
Everything's in the system. It's all ready to go. Exactly. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
No. It's fair. And then, I feel like Santa would recognize that the Bills are the tiny Tim, the little orphan Annie, the little kind of, they're the neediest case here. And I feel like maybe he'd use his position to flip us a little bit. You know, to flip us a couple. You know, punts or, you know, interceptions that maybe we didn't deserve, you know, maybe there's a couple little extra gifts end up in the Bills' lap. And so I feel like that helps us out. I feel like Santa ends up tipping the scales in the Bills' balance. I think it ends up in like a, you know, a 28-24 kind of, you know, we just narrowly get one by the Pats, you know, in a shocker. And the Pats, what happens, of course, is, again, given this is at New England, Santa does not make it out of the state. There is no Christmas the next day. As Santa, you know, murdered by the Pats fans as they
depart. Sad.
We had to go to Santa murder.
Died as he,
yep.
He died as he lived.
Well, if you weren't going to kill a Bill this week in this day in Bill's history,
we had to kill Santa somehow.
I know, and I've been trying. All I can find for this day is Rob Johnson leading the quarterback battle with Doug Flutie for the starting position in 1999.
Okay.
And that Sam Coward in 2000 is going all out in pursuit of greatness. It has not been a great day for headlines.
Sam was a good linebacker.
Yeah, you know, he was a great, great linebacker. He went the Watkins route and had a lot of injuries he had to battle.
Yeah. And then for our last game, this is again the last of the kind of AFC East gauntlet here. This is at the Dolphins, and again the Dolphin season is over at this point. The Bills season is over at this point. So the Bills show up, and all the Dolphins show up as well. And this is the actual Dolphins players again, mind you, but they are coked out of their minds because it's Miami and it's New Year's, and they got better things to do than worry about a freaking football game. So they are partying hard on the sideline. Now this does have some advantages, I think, but I'll let Paul, why don't you take the lead on this
part? This the snow also being the theme here on this one. Kind of, yeah.
It's snowing, man, in Miami, folks.
I think the Dolphins are really just going to dominate this first half of play. I do not foresee any way that the Bills are going to keep up with them for a half. Jay Ajayi running from the 20-yard line into the end zone in 1.4 seconds. That's going to be difficult for the Bills to keep up with that kind of speed. But I have a feeling the Bills might gain a slight edge in the second half when the Dolphins are in fact passed out on the field. So I think the Bills are still not going to be able to come back and win, because I think the Dolphins will have run up about a 70-0 lead in the first half, but they come close. They come 70-69. They miss an extra point. So I'm giving this one to the Dolphins on that line.
Tough way to lose.
It is, you know, and then you got to go into the season, like the end of the season, thinking about that. You're on a down note. You can't even say, well, I'm happy we won, ended on a positive note. You know, hopefully we just fixed a couple things. We all be back next year. Paul, I sort of hear what you're saying, but I got to disagree a little because of one two-syllable compound word, and that's offsides. I have and or false start. I have zero faith that the Dolphins – I think that the NFL will have to convene in the first half and decide what happens when you get 56 false starts in a row. Can you ultimately just be backed up into your own end zone? And I think that will really put a hamper, because I don't think the twitching Dolphins really won't be able to stand still for the snap. And then if they're on defense, I think I would just do hard counts until they prove they could. Now, the problem is you'd have some very angry cokeheads with you. You know, they'd maybe get violent.
And if you don't know whether that's a problem, believe us, it's a problem.
Yeah,
you do not want angry cokeheads after
100 pounds.
Our original
coke headed for Tyrod.
I was gonna say our original board op, Adriana. She was not happy that time.
Oh wow, we brought up the board ops and Judy Greer in the same podcast.
Yeah,
it's like 2012 all over again for the podcast.
But in deference to the little baby that is now on the thing, I'll end my discussion of this. And just, I think the Bills will win the football game by a score of 30 to, I don't know, whatever number is less than 30 you want to pick.
I also think that the Bills will win due to the same reasons Paul said. It will be a high score. I will be back in a moment.
Okay.
I can do a well, Scott is busy attending to the coked up child. Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, no.
Wow.
The child's not coked up.
That's just normal baby stuff, yep. Sir. Sir.
Yes, I know. I'm aware. I'm the one who does not have.
I think Scott gets to punch you in the arm when he sees you now. I don't know.
Yes, he does. So the Bills on this day, they were in 2002, 15 years ago, were alleged to be in hot pursuit of a defensive end. They, in fact, then landed that defensive end, Mr. Chidi Ahanotu. Do you remember that name, Frank? Chidi Ahanotu? I remember it was a very crazy name, and I remember – obviously, and I think I'm going to go to his Wikipedia page, if my phone will let me do so. And he was he one of the first players to come out? Was that it, or have I just started a rumor?
I don't remember this at all. I just totally misspelled his name, and I came up with the ArizonaSportsFan.com signed Chidi Ahanotu. Now, I'm looking him up now. They might be.
I remember the name, and I remember there were rumors that he said Warren Sapp was a bully. He came out in 2013 and mentioned that he was ordered to surrender his NFC championship ring after a legal action taken against his ex-wife. So I guess he was not gay. He did say the court system is a farce. This court wants a man to hand over his once-in-a-lifetime contract to pay some damn attorney's fees. I could see if it was going to pay something for my children or ex-wife, but it's to pay the damn attorney. I don't have $130,000. It's been a long time since I played in the NFL. Frank and I are lawyers, of course. So, well, no, Frank is a lawyer. I'm not, but I manage many, many, you know, people who work for lawyers. And so I know the law well enough to know that, yeah, yeah, you got to pay that. That's how that works. Lawyers don't work for free. Their love does cost a thing. So, yeah, so that was kind of interesting. They signed Chidi Hantu, not gay, so I'm sorry for starting that rumor on this podcast.
He had some very poignant comments of when they were talking about whether there could be an openly gay player in the NFL. And he said that opposing players would verbally abuse and berate that openly gay player, plain and simple. It's not a politically correct world on the gridiron. Quite the contrary. In fact, opposing team players would go out of their way to take that openly gay player out. And I do not mean with extra hard hits, illegal hits, and hits to the head. No, not because of gay bashing, but simply for the reason that the perceived meek or weak are preyed upon in the NFL. Opposing team fans would do the same to that openly gay player. Teammates of that openly gay player would toe the company line and be politically correct. So he sort of was saying, like, I think that maybe that's where you're, this is in 2013. So
yeah,
this is maybe it. When Michael Sam was like coming to the, maybe a little before he came to the NFL, but maybe people were putting feelers out about it. Played most of his 12-year career with the Bucks. Said that if a player came out as openly gay, opponents would deliberately try to injure him. And so maybe that's where you were.
Yeah, that must be why it sounded familiar. Because I remember it's kind of another very interesting, insightful comment. So the Bills signed this guy 15 years ago today. We were talking about, do you know who are, actually, Scott, this is a good trivia question because I don't think you're around for much of this discussion. Who are we talking about? Which bill that was signed on 2002, which bill was signed on this day in 2002 that had these very interesting viewpoints on the NFL, potential for an openly gay person in the NFL, as well as his legal battles with his ex-wife and all that sort of stuff?
I'm pretty sure. So today's the 14th.
Yep.
14th. And it's in 2002. So I'm going to go ahead and say Benjamin Disraeli. Prime Minister Benjamin Disraeli. I'm pretty sure he was the one who we signed then. At that point, he had already been Prime Minister for a couple of years. I think that was between his two stints as Prime Minister. I'm trying to remember, but anyway, yeah. So I think we signed him as a tight end, if I recall. And I do remember him catching passes from Bledsoe. So I think I remember him being on the field for at least a couple of those.
Well, but I know Paul usually is the one to let you down here. But I just would like to point out.
I'm pretty sure I've been correct every single time, actually.
true. But if I could just say that Benjamin Disraeli was the first Earl of Beaconsfield, not New Era Field. He was a KG PCFRS, so a kicking guard, a pass catcher, and a first running sir.
It's a free safety, I think that's
just free running safety, correct, thank you. And kicking guard, very important. But he played on Beaconsfield, which would have been not in Buffalo. Paul, do you want to fill in?
The bottom line is Scott was off by a few years. It was, of course, his predecessor, Sir George Cornwall Lewis Chidi Ahanatu. So that was who it was. So yeah, you were looking
the right for honorable in office,
right? The one who was in office,
Bedminster. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So
okay, well, it's that
you win some, you lose some, Scott. It happens.
I think I'm at like 212-2 at this point.
So yeah, that's a good record. Yeah.
Yeah, and both times
that's like a Ric Flair 1980s wrestling record right there.
Yes. Well. If you would like to talk about the Undertaker's record at WrestleMania or the Buffalo Bills or, okay. Paul, who's going to win the game? The second week in a row, I give no shits about,
Week, I'm the one who botched. I made it through the whole outro without mentioning the game. You at least only got like one sentence in.
Well, it's grudge week, obviously, since we just traded. So now we have to have extra motivation to beat the Eagles in preseason.
I am going to say, you know, barn burner of a game comes down to the wire, and I'm going to say the Eagles win 8-4. A lot of safeties. A lot of safeties this game. It's going to be crazy.
At least three.
Pretty sure in this game, Ronald Darby will somehow decapitate Jordan Matthews, even though Jordan Matthews is not going to be on the field. Darby will end up being flying out.
Right, we're not even going to see Darby versus Matthews, which is
be awesome on some level for at least two series. But no, we're not going to see that. Darby's going to decapitate him as he tumbles out of bounds after, you know, injuring Anquan Boldin as well. And then, at that point, the Bills just kind of throw up their hands and throw in the towel. So they lose 21-23.
I say the score will be pi to the natural log of E. And you can pick whichever team you'd like to be the winner. If you have thoughts or comments or questions, or you like this podcast, this is our outro where I will tell you all the information about the things. Our podcast is called Maybe Next Year. We're a Buffalo Bills podcast. You can find us at maybenextyear.wordpress.com. Not blogspot. Maybe next year. Wow, I have lost my mind. That is not where
you just Google us. No.
It's B-Bills, M-N-Y. WordPress.com. Oh my God, the baby is just made me tired. Not your baby, Scott, my baby. B-Bills, M-N-Y.wordpress.com. At B-Bills, M-N-Y on Twitter. Facebook.com/B-Bills, M-N-Y. B-Bills, M-N-Y. At gmail.com is how you can email us. We would be happy to get your comments, your questions, your thoughts. Give us your crazy schedule predictions. Give us your real schedule predictions. Tell us that we are not buying into the NFL season appropriately enough. It's that time of year where, like, the four or five of you that are still listening to this need to go out and give this podcast to someone else and make them listen to it because we need more listeners. And we don't pay for anything, and we don't charge anything. We just do this because it's fun, but it is kind of fun when more people are engaged. And now that we are back in the swing of things, getting weekly, hopefully it'll pick up a bit. If you Google Buffalo Bills podcast, we're not on the first page, guys.
I have us on the first page. I have us at the end on the first page.
Yeah, we're winding down, but we're doing more lately. I was a little more active on Twitter in the last week, and I'll plan to be so going forward. I think once the season picks up, I thought like Sal Majorana was on page two as well. I think we're just
that's a good place to be then.
Yeah. So page two is fine right now. If it's page two in, a month from now, we're going to have to, you know, shut down some podcasts. It's just what we got to do.
Very good. Well, I'm looking at some of the other podcasts, which look terrible. To be honest,
except Bills and Beers, we like.
Yeah, no, they're good. They're good, but there's like a couple others that I'm not even gonna name that are just look like garbage.
Anyway,
what a weird place to end, right?
Yeah, no, it ends with us being bitter and lonely, and that's why this is a Bills podcast.
That's right. I better leave because I definitely am falling asleep sitting up. My name is Frank.
I'm Scott.
I'm Paul.
Good night, everyone.